Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Caregiver Speak, the first online show by and for caregivers and sponsored by eCareDiary.com. I'm Marjorie Pabst, your host. My latest book, Words of Care, can be found on my new website, mycaregivingcoach.com, on Amazon, and on eCareDiary.com. So I hope you have a chance to look at those resources. The purpose of this show is to provide you, the caregiver, with practical tips, tools, and resources for your caregiving. Today is no exception, as I welcome Stephen Warnock, Executive Director of Project Compassion, an agency headquartered in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. The mission of Project Compassion is to create community by organizing groups of volunteers to help those living with illness and their caregivers. Caregivers are able to rediscover the kinds of things they've missed doing and to recover a balance in their lives that they've lost. As executive director, Stephen directs the leadership training for the National Support Team Network. This network develops support teams to assist caregivers and their families. Since 2008, Stephen has developed hundreds of these support teams and offered educational workshops and presentations related to caregivers and patients around the country. Prior to Project Compassion, Stephen worked in the mental health arena, and he served as a minister to youth with two congregations. He holds an undergraduate degree from Bruton Parker College and a Master of Divinity degree from McCaffrey School of Theology in Atlanta. Welcome, Stephen Warnock.
Thank you, Margie. I'm very excited to be on your show today.
Well, we're glad you're here. Why don't we start by finding out how Project Compassion got started. By the way, I love the name. And for you listeners, if you didn't see it listed on eCareDiary today, it's Project-Compassion.
Yeah, so Project Compassion got started in 2000 by a woman named Mary Sullivan. Mary had one of her best friends, Rhonda Wise Holman, go through a journey of breast cancer. It was a five-year journey, and during that time, Rhonda watched her friends and her family try to figure out ways that they could be a support to her. And she was, you know, Rhonda was very well off financially, very well off with her family and friends, had very well educated, but she still struggled in that healthcare maze that's out there, and she wanted her friends to be able to be there and support her, but it was difficult sometimes. And Mary, having seen this, felt like, you know, if it was this hard for someone like Rhonda, who had so many supports, how much harder is it for those of us who may not have that much in our lives? And Rhonda's journey ended up being an end-of-life journey. And Mary made it her mission to find a way to bring people and their families who are living with illness and caregiving, and to connect them to their friends and neighbors and coworkers who have essentially said, let me know what I can do, but don't know how to do it. And so in 2000, Mary looked around and discovered what we now call the Support Team Network, and brought it to Chapel Hill as a tool. And in the process, we have created hundreds of teams, and have become now the training base for the Support Team Network for the country.
That is an amazing story.
Yeah.
And I know many of our listeners were probably nodding their heads when you said, you know, someone has asked me, or I've asked someone else, how can I help? And that's often very well-meaning, but getting started with all of that is difficult. You're absolutely right. So to have a process that people can pick up, friends, neighbors, et cetera, churches.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, what a support team is.
Yeah.
And what does it do, Stephen?
Yeah, so a support team is a way of saying, you know, we also can call it the circles of care. It's essentially a group of people, usually between 4 to 12 or 15 individuals, who are available to support a family as a, you know, as one team supporting one family or individual, or it's a team that can support several different people to do one or two things. Like, so support team is that opportunity for the friends and neighbors and coworkers and those around us to be able to give back, and they do this through what we call the four team principles, which is they do what they already love to do. You know, not just helping people, but, you know, loving, they love to cook, or they love to talk, or they love to do yard work, but they're doing what they already love to do. They do it when they're able to do it. When you have, you know, say 8 people who are on a part of a team, and each one is able to give even 2 to 4 hours a month, that's a lot of support in the big scheme of things. That can be 30 hours of support that wasn't normally there, and that can be hard for one or two people to do by themselves. So they do what they love to do when they're able to do it in a coordinated way with the built-in support system, so that the team itself is organized and coordinated in what they're doing, and making sure that it's what the actual family and friend want to be done. And when we refer to the family or the person who is surrounded by this circle of care, this support team, we refer to them as a friend, with a capital F, not a client or patient, but the friend, because the hope and the goal is for this also to be a chance for an intentional community to take place. And then that team itself supports itself by meeting regularly each month for what we call the 59-minute meeting, so that they get together for less than 59 minutes, less than an hour. And they're there to support each other as much as they are to support their friend, and for everyone to be on the same page in that support.
And so coordination is what you provide when you provide the training, I would assume.
Right.
And I love your idea or your comment, the name, when you say we creating an intentional community. That's a great way to put it, Stephen.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so often that, you know, as I've been working here for the past several years, and one of the things that I've seen is that so often people who are going through illness at the very beginning, especially a caregiver who wants to be that main support for their loved one, you know, at the very beginning, you know, we're trying to find every possible means medically to get better.
Yes.
And finding every way that we can to make sure that our loved one is taken care of and that we are going to invest ourselves fully in that. But what can happen is that energy can go from being used and can be happening, go from days and weeks to months and years really, really quickly. And what I often see is that caregivers are so passionate and so loving, but have a hard time asking for that help, and often wait really a long time before finally saying, I need some help. And I met with an individual the other day who his wife is living with Parkinson's, and, you know, he still has a lot of energy. And one of the things I said to him, I said, you know, I appreciate you actually making yourself vulnerable enough to ask for help early on while you still had some energy and weren't fully burned out yet and overwhelmed. And you know, he admitted that he was still a little bit tired, but that he appreciated that.
Yeah, that's great. And hopefully he will take that coaching to heart and ask for even more help. So what is it, Stephen, that a support team doesn't do? I mean, are there some things that they're just sort of off base for support teams?
Yeah, so you know, what support teams do, they do are like practical things like going to the grocery store, driving someone to the doctor, meals. They can provide emotional, social support, just someone who can be there as a friend. Some teams even are very walking along somebody through their spiritual journey and being that spiritual support. Or doing activities, the quality of life type of things that we love to do but don't have the energy to do, or you know, walking our dog, or someone to talk to us about golf that we haven't had a chance to play in a long time. And they can also provide be a resource or advocacy support for someone to help organize bills or to look at other resources in the community that maybe the caregiver has not had the energy or time to really find. You know, there's one team that we worked with where she was taking care of her husband who's living with Alzheimer's, and she was working full-time still, and she just had not had the energy to find resources in the local community. And so the team said, well, that's something we can do. Can we do that? She said, please do. So they organized a list of 5 resources, laid out the name of the organization, the contact number, a brief description, and that was what she needed, someone just to lay it out for her.
Mm-hmm.
But that was something the teams can do. Now, what the teams don't do is they don't lend or give money. We call them the 4 M's. No money. They don't dose or administer medicine. So that we take that off the plate for them. They don't provide direct medical care, and they all don't offer direct mental health care. It's essentially, they do things that a friend and neighbor would do and not something that a healthcare professional or a family member would do.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So who can have a support team? That might seem like a simple question,
no.
But who, you know, who can do that?
Yeah. You know, anybody who is willing to be open to a team can have a support team. You know, we provide the support for anybody who any age range. And if they're going through a serious illness or a chronic long-term illness or even a short-term illness, we help people get those teams up and going, at least locally here. And we've seen people who have used teams and have molded it to fit their own organization or their group, you know, from as simple as someone needing to go through knee surgery. And so they say, hey, we can, you know, let's create an 8-week team to support that person as they go through that because they don't have anyone around them. So someone who is going through an end-of-life journey through cancer or through any other thing, and that team, you know, we've seen teams that have been together for years as they support someone.
Yeah. Well, I've just thought of this is like a kind of a two-part question here,
uh-huh.
Stephen. So how are they trained, and do you sometimes find in the training that one individual just isn't working out as a team member?
Uh-huh.
Maybe,
yeah.
You know, personality-wise.
Right.
They thought, let's say 8 people thought they were all going to get along. They
right.
get into the training and they go, what? You know, either they self, you know, identify, or they're making the team crazy. How does all that work out?
So let's start with the training piece. So there's 2 elements to the training. There's what we call the orientation, which is about a 2 to 3 hour orientation that we do with teams, at least locally here in North Carolina, where we orient teams on how to be a team. And orient people on how to work, how a team works. And in part of that, we talk about the do's and don'ts. We also talk about healthy boundaries and limits. And we talk about, you know, we do a lot of exercises that help them get to that emotional place of understanding what it is to support someone and what it is to be careful of what your own healthy boundary is. And then we also have a training that we do, which can be either 1 day or a 2-day training where we do the trainings here, which teach people how to develop and sustain their own teams within their own organization, or their own neighborhood, or their faith community, wherever they are. And we also travel and have people bring us in nationally to lead a training and teach people how to do that. And then, you know, once the team is up and going, part of that reason why we want teams to meet monthly is because we want them to also look at themselves to make sure that everybody who's on the team wants to be on the team. You know, we've definitely had people who've attended an orientation and gone, oh, this isn't what I want to do, but that's, you know, that's okay because not everybody can be on a team. Not everybody
mm-hmm.
wants to be on a team. And when they find and discover that's not what they want to do, then that's fine. We support that. We even have what we call a guilt-free membership so that someone may be on a team at the beginning, and then life happens. They move, or their energy isn't where it needs to be, and they can't even, you know, participate once every other month. So they'll go off the team for a time, and that's fine. We want teams to celebrate their time on the team instead of making them feel guilty for leaving the team.
Yeah.
So
there are members that do burn out and then
yeah.
leave and then come back and
yeah.
and but there's that sort of not liberal isn't quite the right word, maybe flexible
right.
Aspect to a team where you can
right.
leave and then come back, and much
yeah.
like caregiving, right? I mean,
right, exactly.
It would be nice if caregivers always had that option to continue the passion and then to get some rest themselves.
Right, and even if a caregiver has a lot of family around who are helping them, you know, a team can still be very supportive in a way that a family may not be able to be. And it's also that sometimes we don't realize it, but there are friends and neighbors who want to help but just don't know how to do it or
yeah.
don't want to impose or don't want to assume or, you know, and it goes back with the caregivers too. The caregivers can sometimes feel like, well, I don't want to impose on anybody else. Somebody's worse off than me. But sometimes I think we just, what we help people to do is realize that maybe you both want each other. And this is
yeah.
a way to keep your friends involved and keep your friends feeling like they're actually there for you.
What about the issue of confidentiality?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I can see where people maybe even inadvertently
uh-huh.
might say things that should not be said.
Right.
And so how do you manage that in the training and in the continuing process of the team?
Well, that's part of what we do with the Healthy Boundaries and Limits. You know, it's one of the elements that we bring in is that confidentiality is very important, and it actually works well within a team setting. Because if you're one person or maybe even two people who are supporting somebody and you are told so many, like, very confidential information, it can start to wear on you. You may not have an outlet for that yourself as a volunteer or as an individual, a friend. So the team aspect allows for a team of people to know that in that team, everybody in that team is going to hold the same confidential information, but it won't go outside of that team unless the friend or that family wants it to go outside, so that the friend and family knows that anything that they share with the team will be shared within the team, but nothing else, not beyond that team. And it helps the team members know that, you know, hey, okay, I have someone I can call on my team to talk about something that I'm not sure of or I'm uncomfortable with, and you don't have to fear it being spread. It stays within that. And the team members sign a form that they go through, and their team member agreement form, where they know what is expected of them as a team member, you know, not just the guilt-free membership piece, but also that anything that they share with them, they're not going to share beyond the team.
Yeah. So let's turn to some of the logistics.
Yeah.
I know our listeners are probably thinking, okay, how do I find out more, and where does Project Compassion serve, and so
right.
on. So let's start with where does Project Compassion serve? What geographic areas?
Yeah, people ask us many times, is there a Project Compassion in my area? so we geographically, our office itself serves the Triangle area of North Carolina. So we serve Orange, Durham, and Raleigh. Wake counties and Chatham counties, so it's kind of like Raleigh, Chapel Hill, Durham areas. But we don't, unfortunately, aren't able to spread ourselves out to train other people in different parts of the country or do teams in different parts of the country. But what we do offer is the opportunity to be brought out to train people on how a team works. And also we are available for people to call us and ask questions about how we've done it and how it looks and you know, how they might be able to get something started. And like I said, we offer training so that people can come to us or we can go to them, depending on what is available in their schedule.
Okay. So to get this phone number, is it on your website, Stephen?
Yeah. So our phone number is 919-402-1844, and it is listed on our website under the About Us section. And our website, again, is www.project, and then a dash or hyphen, whichever, however you want to call it, compassion.org. We always say that hyphen is very important, or else you'll end up in California.
I love it.
So, yeah, and in our my email is also very easy to access, which is my first name, Stephen, with a V, at project-compassion.org.
Great. That's very good. And so we'll repeat that here at the end of the show again for our listeners. So how do people get referred? I mean, do people get referred to Project Compassion,
yeah.
or can they just call you directly? Or How does, if I'm a family, if I'm a caregiver, and I have someone that I think, you know, needs the kind of thing like Project Compassion. Let's say I'm out in Montana someplace, but I just want to find out about it. I want to find out if anybody is doing anything remotely like you.
Yeah.
How do I do this? How do I access this information?
Again, you can call us. You know, we get referrals from both people, both caregivers and some those who are living with illness themselves. We also get referrals from doctors and social workers and family members and friends who want a team to see if a team is a good potential for them. And so so people easily can call us. We are very accessible. And also email is a great way to get a hold of us. So and then our website has you can look at our information and resources that we have on our website. We don't, first of all, we don't have a list of all the places that have been trained. But if given your information, a lot of times I can find out if there is a group that has been trained near you.
Great. So how much does a team cost? Someone.
Yeah.
If, you know, again, and I know I'm in an area where you, or Project Compassion serves people with teams. How does this work? Who pays for it? That sort of thing.
Right. So
the economics of it.
The economics. Well, that's always a fun thing, especially for a small nonprofit that does a lot of great work and big work. So we don't charge anyone to create a team. We don't charge the family or the individual or the team members to get a team up and going. So it's free, essentially.
Yeah.
But what it's not free for us, of course, is it does cost us money to do an orientation and to get a team up and going and to do the legwork that it requires. So we depend on the generosity of individuals and donors and organizations who have found what we do to be very important to them and to their community. And so that, and then, you know, we have depended on grants over the years, but as I don't, you know, many people might not realize that grants are harder and harder to get for small nonprofits. And so we are always looking for ways to involve others in helping us raise money so that we can continue to do what we do. Just to give you an idea, it costs us between $2,000 and $2,500 to create a team and get it up and going and help sustain it over a year period.
My word, that's good. Costs some money, yes.
It does.
Well,
and, cost-effectiveness is quite impressive just because of how many hours a team can end up giving, which would be anywhere between 400 and 600 hours a year. So
the return on investment is really good.
Yes. It can usually cost you between $10,000 and $20,000 to have that much time.
You bet. So if you're someone out there who's a caregiver, has been a caregiver, you're a member of a family where illness or that your prospects are that you're going to be a caregiver, whatever your situation, if any of you know of resources, entities that would help Project Compassion, please give Project Compassion a call or zip an email to Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
I know he would love to hear from you on some of your ideas.
Yeah.
That would be just great. I'd like for you to repeat a couple things.
Okay.
Oh, no, before I go there, I just want to ask for also, besides support teams,
all right,
what else does Project Compassion focus on? Are there other services that you provide?
That we do. Many of the things that we focus on revolves around caregivers and supporting them. And some of the other ways that we do that are through what we call currently initiatives around. One's called Unbroken Circle, which focuses on faith communities and helping them to be better acquainted with how to support their congregants and community members as they're going through illness. Caregiving.
I've read this book. It's a terrific book, Stephen. It's just wonderful.
It's wonderful. Our former executive director, James Brooks, wrote this this toolkit, and it's so impressive.
Yes, it is.
Well done. We also have our Ask the Caregiving Coach that Ms. Marjorie Papps helps write on our website. And
thank you.
And then we also have another initiative that we've started up called Farther Along, which focuses around grief and bereavement for those who've lost loved ones or who are going through difficult times around grief. And you know, many of the things that we do also focus on helping support through education and training. So we don't just do education around support teams, but we also train and educate people around topics on grief and end of life and caregiving, and it runs the gamut, but how they're all interrelated. So those are some of our main initiatives and some of the things that we continue to focus on. And people do have us come out and speak, not just on support teams, but also on those topics as well.
Yeah. Well, it's all amazing work, Stephen, and you're to be commended. And I sometimes think you probably just sleep in your office. You just are probably there all the time.
Yeah, but, it has its days, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, why don't you give us this information again, the phone numbers and the website and the email, if you would do that again for us.
Yeah, so the phone numbers, our phone number is 919-402-1844. The website is /compassion.org. And then my email address is my first name, Stephen, with a spelled with a V, S-T-E-V-E-N, @project-compassion.org.
Great. Wonderful. Stephen, by the way, is going to be back on the program in January with one of his colleagues,
uh-huh,
Carol Henderson, and they're going to be talking about a wonderful initiative at Project Compassion using storytelling. And so I know they have a specific strategy that they use, and I think all of you will be very interested. That's going to be upcoming in January.
Yes.
So be sure to tune in for that. And next week, I'm proud to say that Dr. Gay Hanna will be joining us. She's the Executive Director of the National Council for Creative Aging. She'll be here along with the caregiver panel. And we're going to be specifically talking about using the arts for connecting the generations, for caregiver respite, and for overall well-being. So I hope that you'll join us on October the 1st at 2 p.m. Eastern for that specific program. And now I'd like to thank Stephen so much for taking the time to be with us today and for providing us the information about Project Compassion.
Yeah.
It truly is an amazing and unique organization.
Well, I appreciate it, Marjorie. And one of the things I will mention that I just didn't is that we also do a lot around advanced care planning and patient advocacy.
Yes.
So there,
yes, you know,
there's.
Would you like to say, we've got a couple minutes here, would you like to add any more about that?
Yeah, well, the advanced care planning piece is, you know, one of the things that we help to do events and resources so that people can understand and talk and communicate about end-of-life choices,
yes,
so that their wishes will be honored and their relationships strengthened. And one of the ways that we've done that, not through just events, but is another book called Getting It Together, which was a great workbook put together by Dr. Trudy Couch when she was 95.
Oh, my.
So that her daughters had a space, a one-place find-all opportunity to know where all her financial information was and all her passwords and everything are in one easy place. And then it also, what I love, has at the very end, talks about, you know, who do I want you to talk to or contact when I pass. And it talks about a lot of other things as well, but it's a great, helpful guide. So.
Sounds like a wonderful practical book. I'm going to
yeah.
get it, especially written by a 95-year-old.
Yeah.
Would that all of us are able to do that when we're 95.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Stephen. Thank you, listeners, so much. And please tune in next week for our next show. And thanks again. This is Margie Pabst. Have a great day. Bye.